This week we're talking art and faith with Erin Ionian Monroe. She is a world-renowned makeup artist whose work has been seen on major films, TV shows, red carpets. Why her credits are very impressive from films like Maleficent, Charlie's Angels, The Great, The Neon Demon, Freakier Friday. Her reputation, I think, definitely extends beyond the projects themselves. Like, one thing that I think sets Erin apart is the caliber of actors and talent that she really request her by name, flying her around the world to join them on sets, red carpets, films, shows. But, you know, people like Elle Fanning, Zoe Kravitz, Lucy Liu, Daniel Day-Lewis, Cameron Diaz, Lindsay Lohan, Rachel Platten, and many more. You know, the world of makeup and fashion glamour and entertainment kind of has its own universe in a way, and where the glam teams are considered talent themselves and highly sought after. It's a space that at times can kind of come with egos in some places, but Erin stands out for very different reasons. I've worked with a lot of makeup artists. My wife has worked with a lot more than me. And two things that are very clear about Erin is, one, she's incredibly talented, really achieving at a high level in what she does. She might call herself a medium-sized fish in a pond, but that pond she's referring to is the entire global entertainment industry. So, which perfectly segues to point two, deeply humble and approachable. But, you know, not in a passive way, but in a way that someone is like, their identity is not rooted in what they do, but rooted in a good God. We talked some about that. And really throughout this conversation, I feel like you'll notice this reoccurring theme of sort of like serving others and practicing servant leadership. For Erin, it seems to be about like doing your very best while still putting people above projects. And I love this conversation. I think you will too. So let's talk art and faith with Erin Ionian Monroe. When God became real to you, is there a moment that comes to mind when you're like, oh, I feel
like... There is. And it's funny because it was when I was 7 years old, even though I didn't really start following Jesus until my late 20s. My best friend that lived across the street from me, they were Christians and we were atheists, or my parents were atheists. And I wanted to just hang out with my girlfriend. And they're like, yeah, you can go to Sunday school if you want. It's a bunch of superstitious BS. Have fun, kid.
Yeah.
And they told us the gospel story and asked if we wanted to say the prayer. And I remember saying it and really meaning it at the time, like really like, yeah, I want that. Wow. And I know that God, you know, takes that on his terms, not because I fell away or because I didn't follow up as a 7-year-old, that it wasn't dependent on me. So I know he was there all through my life and through my 20s. And when I look back, I can see so many moments where there was like a fork in the road where I could have really done some damage to myself and really gone down a bad path. And he always gave me this incredible clarity to see that moment of the fork and to choose. Wow. And it was never about like, God is showing me this or any recognition of God's hand in my life whatsoever at that point. Because, you know, I had just gone home and not even told my parents about it or thought about it ever again. You know, you're just a kid. But he was there through all of that, sort of giving me choices, showing me, making sure that I didn't stumble into the wrong path unawares.
That's cool.
Yeah. And then in my late 20s, I just was having all those conversations with myself, like, what does it all mean? What is truth? There has to be a higher standard of life to the one I'm holding myself to. Like, what does truth and righteousness and excellence mean? And really starting to think about those deep life questions. And I was living in Texas at the time in the late 90s and went to a church on an Easter Sunday, just a church that was kind of near where I was. And it was all Black church. I was the only white person in there. And they were very sweet and welcoming. And it was a very charismatic church. There was a lot of like wailing and like pastor down in the aisle mopping his sweat off his brow. It was like, wow, this is something I've never experienced or seen before, but there's something here that feels right. Like there was love in that room. And I just thought, yeah, like I like what I feel here. And around the same time, my whole family got saved and had become Christians in California, all like independent of each other. Whoa. Through different ways. And it was a miracle because we were a very close family. And I know if some of us would have accepted Jesus and the rest not, it would have been this big abyss between us and between how we perceived reality around us. And God in his mercy was like, okay, you come over here. You're my people. And wow. And we got baptized in this California church. I got baptized in 1998. And it was funny because the pastor of that church had started his church in the 70s when I was a little kid. And my mom said that he had come around our house because he was knocking on doors and inviting people to his church. And my mom said, oh, well, we're atheists, but, you know, have a good day. Good luck with that. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure when he walked down the path, he probably away from our house, he had probably prayed for our family. And whatever many years, like 25 years later, whatever it was, we all got baptized in his church.
So cool.
So, yeah.
Man, to be like have a close family. I grew up in a family that already like, you know, my parents were Christians. But to have like a close-knit family, but then for them to not be Christians yet, I feel like that had to be kind of difficult on you. Was that like more difficult as you were getting older, or was there a peace in it?
I didn't know anything different.
Yeah.
I had no peace at all because I'd had, you know, I mean, everybody has some rough childhood story, or most people do at least. And nobody reaches adulthood unscathed, really. And I had some pretty significantly painful, damaging things happen to me in my youth. Mm. So I never really had peace at all. And I didn't really know that I was supposed to feel something different, but the pain that I'd experienced very much identified me. It was an identity. Wow. And, you know, I went around sort of trying to heal those parts of myself in extremely damaging ways, as you do when you're broken and don't really see any better or see clearly.
Yeah.
Merciful God protected me from doing damage that I couldn't come back from, but I hurt myself a lot, and I hurt other people too, trying to fix myself. And God brought me through that. He really, you know, he redeemed it, and he's still redeeming it. I mean, I'm 55 years old and I still feel like I'm a baby Christian, and I'm learning things about his love and learning how to accept his love and walk in what I know is the freedom that is available to me when I obey him. Because, you know, there's still that sin nature of like, no, I want to do things my way. I've got it from here, God. I'm good. When it's really bad, you get on your knees. And what I've learned is like, you know what, just stay down there on your knees. You do better.
Ultimately. Works out better.
Okay, I'm good. God, I've got it from here. And then you find yourself, you know, inevitably, however long that takes, days, years, weeks, whatever it is, you're back on your knees. Like, God, help me. I've made, you know, this isn't what I want, or this isn't how I want things to be.
Totally.
To different degrees, everyone has that, I think. So it's a journey.
Absolutely. When you said, I got it from here, God, that's something I relate deeply to, is that like there's this pattern in my life of to a fault, you know, being like, save me, Lord. And then I get rescued and think, okay, I'll take it from here now.
Yeah. Like, oh, thank you. Okay, I'll better.
Yeah.
Totally. I want to go back to doing what I want to do.
Exactly. Even when I was like really young, I asked the Lord, I was like, oh, what should I? All my siblings were older and like choosing their career paths. And I was like, prayed for actually like years. The Lord would tell me what he was going to use me in. And I felt like he had told me, and I really do still believe this, he told me it involved filmmaking, but it was funny, you know. And I started learning how to edit and stuff. But very quickly, it's like that was my identity. It was like, I'll take it from here. And then, you know, like many people probably moving out to Los Angeles and just isolated from all my community and chasing after this more than anything, this filmmaking stuff and just crashing and burning and needing him to rescue me. You know,
it's inevitable when we put our identity in anything other than him.
Yeah.
It's always going to crash and burn because he wants better for us, you know?
Yeah. It's good.
I recently had a great experience with kind of coming to the end of myself in an area of my life and having the experience of finally being able to, in reality, understand and do that transfer of like, God, will you carry this for me? Will you carry that for me? I'm going to put this in your hands. I'm not going to hold on to it. And I've always understood, oh, leave it at the cross, let God carry it. But okay, but how does that actually work in life? Like, how does that actually take place?
Yeah.
And I had never been able to experience that. And I was finally able to experience that because I was just like, I'm going to give him all this stuff to hold for me. And it's not like I have to act like it didn't matter or it's not part of who I am anymore. It's part of my experience, but I'm going to let him hold it. And I was like, oh, that's what they mean when they say X, Y, Z. Like, oh, that's what that means.
Yeah.
And it really happened. And it was like, okay, well, if you're going to give all those things up and let him hold them, then what is your identity? And there was a real peace in going, well, it doesn't really, really matter even. Like, I can just kind of like wait and let God over time give me a new identity, after having been a Christian for, I don't know, since 1998. It's like, ooh, I can have a new identity.
Totally.
So, yeah, that was something that kind of just happened a few weeks ago that was really wonderful. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I feel like that's so important, especially for someone who like feels called to create or has art in some way, because I think it's one thing to have a job, and I've had these jobs where like, oh, I just have to like check these things off this to-do list. But another thing where you're like trying to bring your ideas into this, or what feels like your ideas.
Yeah.
And so to do that and to not put your identity in it is feel like it was been a tricky road for me. And
yeah,
you know, I think the idea of, and what you're saying is like, I think I used to do the thing where I was like, oh, it doesn't matter. None of it matters because that would make me feel better if it doesn't matter, you know.
But it does matter.
That's exactly
like
right.
Like you're trying to trick yourself, but you're, you know better than that does matter.
Yeah. It's actually like puts you down this like nihilistic, like nothing really matters, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I kind of found, I hit the ground on that idea and how it didn't serve me or the Lord.
Like I'm not convincing myself this is not working.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I have a good version of that in that it doesn't matter. I mean, and this sounds nihilistic, but it doesn't feel like that when I say it. But when everyone's kind of panicking at work and there's some big drama about a film or TV show or something and something's not working, I'm like, you know what? We're all going to be dead one day. None of this is going to matter. Just like keep perspective, people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. In the film industry, especially, yeah. I have buddies that work in the ER and stuff. And they're like, when I hear
really
about
is life and death.
Days, I'm like, okay, okay. gives me perspective. I wanted to ask you, if someone who is like less too familiar to the makeup artist world, can you tell us like a little bit about your work and like the art and decisions you kind of like make when you're brought on to like a film or a show, or like, yeah, just a little bit about what that looks like.
Okay. Well, the first thing I need to do is read the script, obviously, and discuss the character with whatever actor I'm working with so that I know exactly how they see that person and how they want to portray that character. Because, of course, that's going to inform what I'm going to do to a tremendous degree. The director will have a conversation. I'll have a conversation with the director as well and see what that person thinks about the character and what they want to see from them. I've had the fortune of working with the same people for over a decade. And we basically listen to the director and then kind of do what she wants to do.
Yeah.
But that usually flies because, you know, she's respected and the directors always respect her. But and I'll think about, okay, detail. It's like down to the tiniest detail. And even if the audience never sees those details, I do think that it makes an effect that maybe they're not even aware of like an authentic sense of who this person is, even if they don't notice the tiny mark I put there, the little thing I did here. And the actor knows, and it helps them to fully inhabit that character. And for characters, like, it's a totally different world than when I'm doing fashion or red carpet. You want to eliminate any flaws. You want everything to just be like otherworldly, surreally perfect. But for film and for TV, you're creating a character. So you have to look at the makeup from that person's perspective. If they're wearing any cosmetics that are there to make that character feel better about herself, you have to think about what would this character do, not what would I do. Because if you've got some ordinary woman living in ordinary USA and she's got this like flawless makeup artist looking makeup, it can take you out of the story and it's ridiculous.
Totally.
You know, it's like you have to be willing to incorporate flaws into your work and make it look like real people look.
Yeah.
So you always have to be thinking about that.
That's
fun. I love doing that.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, even from red carpet to like a gritty film, like if obviously you just were kind of answering how different that can be. Mm-hmm. But is there one that you find more fun or like kind of like creatively fulfilling or?
Equally so.
Yeah.
I mean, like red carpet is like my 8-year-old's dream of dress up times a million.
Yeah.
I mean, you have some incredible couture gown and one of the prettiest, most, you know, beautiful people in the world to work on. And she's excited about it like a little girl, too. And, you know, it's like
Pretty great.
You know, I've got this team that I've worked with for so long. A hairdresser and stylist and actress, and it's just fun. It's like, how can we absolutely make this the most radiant moment possible? And I mean, that gives me tremendous joy. It's just such fun, pure fun.
Yeah.
But then like the satisfaction of seeing a character come to life on screen is incredible too. Like, wow, like, oh, that thing worked.
Or,
you know, it's like, oh, that actually looks right. And seeing all of the things that you plotted and planned out come into life is a thrill. And there's always a moment when I see footage of something for the first time. It's a little bit of a cringe. What's it going to look like 20 feet wide?
The biggest screen in the world on IMAX.
Yes. Yeah. And especially when I started doing film, which was like the early 2000s, people weren't like watching it on their computers or their phone or whatever. It was like, you know, only in the movies, basically. You know, it was going to be massive. And one of the first things I did was the Charlie's Angels sequel with Lucy Liu, and I had never gone to dailies before, or seen dailies or done anything like that. And I remember sitting in the theater for the first round of dailies, and like behind us were the director and the producer and like all the people from Sony. And like, I was just waiting for it to come on screen, like,
yeah.
And she came on screen and she looked beautiful. And it was like, oh, you can do this, you know?
Totally.
And it got applause in the theater and everyone was like, Team Lou, great, you know? And I was like, so relieved. Like, okay, you're not an imposter.
That's right.
Yeah, it was a great moment. But you always have those feelings. I mean, even I've been doing this for 30 years and I still am always like a little bit bracing myself for what flaws are you going to see? What did you miss? Kind of thing.
Yeah. I mentioned this to Caleb not too long ago, but I went to this like a Q&A with, it was all the Oscar nominated writers of a previous year.
Oh, wow.
And it was so funny. As the mic
I did
was
one
passed,
of those with a makeup artist.
You did? Oh,
yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Go ahead.
As the mic was passed down from person to person, the big message was they all are like, I don't really know what I'm doing. Sometimes I feel like, you know, I'm going to be kicked out of here soon, but for now I'm here, you know, and I'm like,
yeah.
It's like, it's just that consistency.
Yeah. And it's also just the awareness that nothing is for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, every job is a blessing. You can have, you know, a reasonable degree of security, but it's never ironclad. I mean, anything can happen.
Yeah.
We could have another pandemic.
Totally.
You know? I mean, like, hush my mouth, but you know, like, you don't, we just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So just to be grateful in every job that you have and every moment and do your very best. And that's all you can do. I just, that's what I remind myself. Like, you've done your best. So that's the best you could have done. Like, you can't do anything further beyond that, you know?
Yeah.
And just let it go past that. And I also tend to really focus on the experience of the people around me, my team.
Yeah.
And the cast that comes in the trailer and the environment that I've created, because those are the eternal things. Like, how can I bless people around me? How can I lift up the people that are working under me to feel better about themselves, grow as artists, feel loved and supported, and create that kind of environment in the trailer? Because that's something that you can do no matter what, like, your ideas are coming or not that day. You can always bless people in that way. And you know, your day was like, had some meaning and some success.
Yeah.
And when you know, I always find when I make an effort to behave that way, like, God always blesses that. Like, I get all these ideas coming and I know that they're not just like, because I'm so smart. like Jesus just pours ideas into my head.
Yeah. I just had this kind of worship pastor duo on the previous week. And they were like, oh, from a place of worship, like if you can be sort of in a place of worship, even if it's not like out loud, but in a place of worship, mm-hmm. they're talking about like, you know, the Lord is the creator and how like ideas come from that kind of place. And I
he's
never
the
quite,
creator.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I hadn't quite heard it said like that before, but I have found that even like during worship, I'm like, oh, I'm getting distracted by ideas. I need to focus on worship. And
but that's the conversation that you're having with him at that moment, maybe.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. That's, I feel like, what's coming to see that, you know. And so I think to your point, it's like even as you try to create this environment and serve others around you and make an environment where people can, like, feel safe and seen and loved and to totally see ideas kind of coming through that space.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I mean, it's at the end of the day, you just have to remember that relationships and the people are the really, truly important thing.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, I care deeply about my work and I want to do the very best job that I can. But past that, the result is I just leave that in God's hands.
Totally.
You know, and I know that the people are the important thing.
That's good.
Yeah.
I was thinking of like, you often will like travel to a different country with your team and with the, you know, the actor or the talent. And then probably the earliest mornings, you're probably there with them. You're like physically probably inches away from them, you know, the proximity. And then you clock in quite a bit of time. Like every, oh, am I freezing?
You're frozen. I'm not like, I don't hear you.
Let's see. Test, test, test. Can you hear me now?
If you can hear me, I think my internet went out.
It's a second to refresh. One, two, three. Test, test, test.
Yeah, it's like it says trying to reconnect. Make sure you have a stable internet connection, which it looks like full bars like I do. But
hello, hello. No, Lord, I just pray that you would make this Zoom call work. Any enemy attack on it in the name of Jesus. Pray you would make this work.
We're using my phone as a hotspot.
Oh, okay. We're using Caleb's phone as a hot. Hi.
We're using my phone as a hotspot, so it might not be quite as strong a connection as before, but at least it won't cut out.
It.
Okay. I can hear you again. You're frozen, but I can hear you at least.
Oh, I'm frozen?
Yeah.
Frozen like Elsa.
Yeah, I was just thinking. I mean, I haven't even seen that movie, but you can't help but think that. Okay, sure, where were we? Sure. What were you saying? You were asking me something.
Yeah, so I was just thinking about like, so you'll be in like a different country or a foreign place with the talent, you know, that you've come to know. And now like the early mornings of the day, you're with them. And you're like physically very close, probably sometimes within inches, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You're just thinking about, like, you're touching them. And Jim, like, man, that's probably one of the most personal types of art forms
there is. It is. And it's amazing because you can sort of, putting your hands on someone, I can transmit a lot of love and calm and security, how you touch somebody. And I try to be mindful of that. I don't know how much I succeed or how much I fail, but if I'm feeling stressed or nervous, I try to make sure that that's not coming through and how I'm touching somebody. And I love, I mean, I've been very, very blessed to work with people that I adore and love. So, it's a privilege to be in a caretaking position with them. I want to take care of them. So, yeah.
It's cool to hear you call it a caretaking position because that makes so much sense. But it's, I feel like there's, to me, that feels like art and sort of like this, like ministry in a way, you know, like why it's not maybe like outright, like here's the gospel. But it is like an act of loving someone.
I don't think anybody ever got saved like that. Like, I mean, I'm very open about the fact that I'm a Christian. Everybody pretty much knows that I am. And, you know, and obviously like, my opinions and observations are going to usually be run through that filter. But it's like, I don't know who said it, but I do love that saying. It's like preach the gospel every day and use words if necessary. You know, I think if you've developed any kind of place of honor or credibility in somebody's life by loving them and taking an interest in their life in a genuine way for a long period of time, you have much more of a position to speak something into their life, possibly, or be in a position where they might want to hear some of these things. But I never push it on anybody, of course, you know. If I'm asked, I'm very open about it, but it's usually an ask, especially at work,
that's
you
cool.
know.
Yeah. So for you to say, oh, that the most of them know, or a lot of people of them know, is that because of just how long you've worked with them? It's kind of like spilled out over time?
I mean, it just comes up. Somebody will, oftentimes it's come because somebody has said something bad about Christians. I'm like, oh, I'm a Christian.
Really? I mean, that's a fairly bold, you know, boldness to it. I feel like it requires some boldness.
Yeah, I suppose. But I just... You know, I mean, I never want to be ashamed of Christ. Yeah. And it's easy to be afraid of man, especially in an environment that is oftentimes openly hostile to the idea of Christianity. Not that I've ever been unfortunate enough to be in a situation like that. Again, I think I've been very sheltered because I've worked with people for long chunks of time in my career who love me. There was definitely time on a show that I just finished where I heard a group of people talking about Passover, and one of them was trying to explain to the other one what it was, and she was explaining it. She was wrong about what she was saying, and I tried to just kind of like chime in and go, oh, actually, it's da-da-da, and they were like, oh, okay, and it just came out that oh, one of the girls said something about Christianity and all of that. And she goes, yeah, but that's none of that's true. And I was like, oh, I completely disagree. I know that it's true. I know all of that's true. And they were like, oh, okay. Like, what? Okay. Yeah. One of the cast was like, oh, I'd love to hear about that. Mm. And I thought, oh, well, okay. You know, I just thought she's going to ask me later when it's appropriate. And she did. She was in my chair the next day and like, well, what is this whole Christianity thing that you're part of? And like, why are you Christian? So I had the opportunity to share a little bit about it, you know, with her.
That's cool.
But again, it's always very just as I'm asked. I'm very open about my beliefs and identifying with Christ, but actually like talking about what that means and is always just going to come from the person asking you about it.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Do you believe like, and if you have different language for it, whatever's fine, but do you kind of believe like the Holy Spirit plays a role in the creative process or like?
Oh, for sure.
Okay. Tell me more about that or how you've experienced that. Yeah.
Well, like we talked about before, I just think that those ideas come from the creator. You know, the creative force in the universe. So we're all like little image bearers of him. And the only reason we're creative at all is because he's a creator. So that's part of us getting to share in his nature. And I think that if he's gifted us with that, he wants it to bloom and grow. And I just think it comes down to being willing to trust him in that place and not be too obsessed about what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Because it's easy to sort of get into your own head about it. People often want to know what you're going to do ahead of time. Yeah. And I don't ever work like that. I don't know. Like, I'll see when I get there. It's always very spontaneous. And oftentimes, I don't even really know what it's going to be until it's done. It's like, oh, that's what it was. And that makes people nervous. They want you to have a plan.
Yeah.
And oftentimes I do. I have a general vibe of what I want to do. But, you know, the best ideas that have come to me have always come spontaneously. Like I was given them. Like you can tell that it was given to me. And on the rare occasion, when I finish doing a makeup, I can actually feel that something came through me for that person. Like I can feel the love that went through my hands. And that's a wonderful feeling. Yeah.
That's really cool. I feel like that should be like that. I feel like that is a huge, very cool statement. It actually feels very biblical to me. But so you actually kind of feel like there's times you experience like, oh, something went through
that,
me on this.
Yeah. Like that was not me. That was something else. And I can feel, I felt it happen. I lost my train of thought. That was a point I wanted to make. Anyway, moving on. If it comes back to me, I'll let you know.
Yeah. Let me know. I relate to it even from like this like short film I've been working on. You know, I feel like as it's being finished up and there are themes in it that I feel like I'm like, wow, you know, some people were like, oh, what's this about? And I'm like, well, I have my guests, but I really feel like the Lord was a part of this and, you know, that's cool to hear. I wanted to ask you too, like, okay, we're living in Los Angeles in this industry. I feel like a really common theme you hear, you know, whether it's YouTube or anywhere, it's essentially just like, you got to out hustle everybody, you know, build your empire, you know, type thing. And I'm just, I think that a lot of times, like phase two of being a Christian is being like, oh, I'm a little skeptical of my ambitions now. And I think there are times that ambitions can be an issue, but then also I feel like there are times the Lord calls you to things. And I'm just kind of curious, as someone who's like, you've done great work, you've definitely put in your hours, you've, I would say like, you know, very successful in the sense of like, what you do. What is your relationship to ambition like? Like, how do you feel about
I have very
ambition?
Little. I actually have very little. I mean, yeah, it's kind of a wonder I got where I did because I just felt like what propelled me to achieve anything that I've achieved is the love of it. I couldn't help but do it. I just think excellence is incredibly important to do. Like, good enough isn't. Like, I want to do everything to the nth degree that I can possibly do, as so far as it's in my power, be as excellent as I can possibly be. And I think that that makes more of a difference necessarily than a lot of ambition. And to just be somebody who can read the room, be dependable, be discreet. I mean, when you're talking about being a personal makeup artist to an actor long term, doing good makeup is like a given. That's like, okay, now you're in the room. But the thing that is going to put you above and beyond just doing good makeup is understanding when you need to not speak, understanding when to keep your mouth closed, when be able to feel what your actor might need in any given moment. Like they need extra attention that day, or they need you to just get out of their way and not, you have to pick your battles. I mean, there are definitely times when I see possibly a flaw, but I'm not going to stop everything and run in and be like, I have to fix that and make it all about the makeup, because you have to be able to see the big picture and that it's not always about you and your work. And the job is to make that person feel confident and ready to do whatever it is that they're doing. And you, the first and foremost thing is the makeup. But after that, there's so many other little parts of your behavior and your words or your silences that support that. And I think you have to be sensitive enough to understand that part of it and to be able to maneuver kind of sticky world. Everything is super high stakes because there's money involved. And whenever there's big money involved, everything is urgent and everything is super important. And, you know, everything's blown out of their proportion of what's really important. But like within this context, these things are extremely important because it's your one and only job. I mean, that's the job. The job is really a lot about how to understand and navigate that world in a graceful and caring way. And there are a lot of good makeup artists that don't necessarily have that skill. So they will bump from job to job. They might get a lot of jobs, but it's always going to be a temporary thing. You won't see them working for the same person over a stretch of time.
Good. So you talked about helping them to feel confident as one of the most important elements of it. How do you feel like the balance of like, oh, I want them to feel confident and I'm going to give them feedback to help them feel confident. But I don't know, I'm trying to think how to phrase this. Like sometimes I've been on set where I feel like maybe people have learned the confident, making them feel, trying to make the talent feel confident is like the part they do know really well or the part they're pushing, but maybe it's not like serving the talent, like the makeup or whatever is not looking right. You know,
so they're just basically full of it.
Yeah. Well, I think that like
that's called sycophantic. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like knowing that like, okay, I need to like believe what I'm saying too, you know, in the comments. I know you believe in your work, which I'm sure helps, but
that's the thing. I mean, there's definitely in our world, just from a secular standpoint, an element of being able to sell yourself and people believe that you are what you tell them you are. You know, there's a lot of people out there that sort of behave like they're the star and they've been very successful doing that.
Yeah.
And if
definitely been on set with that team.
Yeah. And if that's your personality and that's how you have navigated into your position in your career, I don't want to slam that because that might be what's authentic for them. But that's not who I am, certainly. I mean, I couldn't do that if you paid me. And I think it's just a choice. Who do you want to be in that world? Do you want to spend a whole lot of time building up your mystique and myth in the industry, so to speak, so that you are a big important person and therefore make more money? And you know, that's a reasonable goal for people in the world. I mean, that's what everybody wants, to be successful and make more money. And I mean, I'm no exception. Of course I want to make money and be successful, but I'm only at what cost. Like I'm not willing to take on some sort of a persona that I feel that other people need to see for me in order to get there. You know, I can't be anything but myself, and I don't really want to be anything but myself. it's just a different way. It's a different way. You know, I really truly
sounds
try to
like
put
a less
other
painful
people
way.
Yeah, I truly try to put other people first. Truly.
Cool.
Not that I always succeed, but that's my ambition, is to go against that secular me, you know.
Yeah.
I make sure that my team gets credit for what they've done. if somebody, like if I give an actor to one of my assistants and they do a great job, I don't take credit for that because it's my team. I'm always like, well, that was so-and-so's work. It was a great job. I make sure people know and that people get credit for what they've done. And that makes me feel great to see people lifted up and feel seen and appreciated. I mean, it's, that ends up blessing me. And then I end up with an incredibly loyal team too. I've got a great team who would pretty much, I mean, they do anything for me on set because they know that I see them and I respect them and they feel loved and seen. And I give them a chance to do things. I don't insist on doing every single thing myself. I hand cast to them and you take care of this person. So.
That's cool. So to me, that sounds like fruit of like trusting that the Lord will provide and take care of you, and a fruit from, I would say just trusting the Lord in a way.
Yeah.
Are there any like spiritual practices you do that are like any habits you have, like whether it's, you know, going to church or whatever, you know?
That is one unfortunate side effect of being on a show, because you're just so smashed at the weekend. Like the last thing you want to do is get up and do anything. I am sleeping most of the weekend when I'm on a show. So my church attendance falls way down. Like I won't go for months, but it's not good for me. Like I definitely see that I'm much more drained at the end of a project because I haven't had that fellowship. There's like something that I need to in the future find a way, a bit more of a practice, like getting up and like reading a few chapters of the Bible instead of getting on like looking at Instagram and stuff in the morning, which is an easy thing to slide into.
Totally.
So, you know, we're all flesh and
our default is
to make a mess. The schedule's crushing. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'll be up at usually somewhere between 4 and 6 every morning, and you know, you work they'll usually 12-hour shooting schedule, but you're there 2 hours prior to get cast ready, so your day is at least 14 hours, and then if they go over it could be 15 or 16. Whoa. You don't know. So it's a lot. I mean, on the other hand, if you're working in the UK or Europe, they're very strictly on a 10-hour shooting schedule and they don't ever really go over. It's like when it's 10 hours, that's it. If they want to go over for half an hour, they have to go around and ask every department for permission. People do say no. it's always a little bit less crushing abroad.
Yeah. How do you recover from some of that stuff? Like, is it just
sleep?
Rest or,
I mean, once I got home from, years ago, I did the second Maleficent film, and that was really exhausting. I mean, it was a great experience. We shot in the UK. I was absolutely crushed when we got back here, and I slept for 22 hours straight. Caleb was like, are you alive?
Good for you.
I'm like, yeah, leave me alone. I'm fine.
Still proof of life. And then you go back to bed.
Water, go back to bed. So yeah, just a lot of sleep and seeing people that I, you know, don't ever have a chance to see, my friends or family. So every time I finish a project, it's like, go to Oklahoma and see my family, go to South Carolina, see my husband's family, see friends, catch up with friends that I haven't seen in months, because I'm just completely consumed by a project when I'm on it. There's no time for anything else, really.
I know you mentioned like Maleficent and Charlie's Angels. I'm curious, are there any films that, you know, you don't have to pick a favorite, but are there any that you've worked on that are some that you're like especially proud of or enjoyed or love the way they came out, or any on a list for you kind of?
There's a film, a little project I love called 20th Century Women. It didn't make like a big splash, but I just love that little film. It's Elle Fanning and Annette Bening and Greta Gerwig. Just great little film. There's another one called Low Down that had this amazing cast. It was, again, a film with Elle and John Hawkes. Well, I love that actor. I don't know if you know who John Hawkes is, but you'd recognize his face. Flea was in it. It's about this real life jazz musician in the 70s and his daughter. And that was a great little film. And Freaky Friday just came out a couple
of days ago.
Yeah, so I did that with my team, and it was really, really fun. And it's a sweet little film. I mean, it's a kid's film essentially, but it's grown-ups can laugh in it too. And it's it was really fun. And I adore Jamie Lee Curtis. So that was a great experience. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's so fun. I'm curious, like, do you the storytelling side of it, you know, is that a big motivation for you with it? Or is it like, you feel like it's more like process based or like where, or is it just mixed of both or?
I don't think like, I understand that question.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay.
In the sense of like, if taking on a project, is it like, oh, well, I just really love this story, so I'm very excited about this?
Or is no, it more it's like, more about the cast. It's more about the people that I'm going to be working with.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it's all about the people. And, you know, there's another question that I have been asked and I think is relevant for Christians is there's a tremendous amount of really dark material that comes out of Hollywood. And I take a project by project stance with it. I don't think that it's helpful to say I will never or I will always, because that doesn't really leave room for the Holy Spirit to tell you what he wants in each particular situation. I just think that's a good rule of thumb for life as well. I mean, there's a few hard and fast things that we don't compromise on, obviously, but just autopilot, I don't think is a great idea. You want to sort of be in a constant conversation with God about what he wants you to do in any given situation instead of like, well, this was right 10 years ago, so it's still right. And so, yeah, I've definitely been part of projects that I probably wouldn't go see and don't necessarily think are necessarily a great thing to have out in the world. They're not like purporting Christian values, et cetera, et cetera. But my relationship with the people I'm around is more important. You know, it's not God has given me clear, clear communication that the opportunity to be somewhere and to love people is more important. I'm not responsible for the story that they're putting out necessarily.
Totally.
I mean, of course, that would change tremendously if the people that were putting out this ungodly story were calling themselves Christians. then I would have something to say about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't expect to hold non-believers or non-Christians to the standard of Christianity. I mean, that's not realistic.
Totally. Yeah, I know C.S. Lewis talks about that as well.
Yeah, I mean, you just need to love people and invest in them, invest in the relationships, and be the blessing where you can be, where God puts you.
It's good, so good. I wanted to ask you if you had any, like, it could be advice or spiritual advice, but like, you know, kind of the idea for like your 25-year-old self, like the big picture is like, what is the Lord showing you something like over the time that you've learned that you would have told
you would
tell yourself?
So much. Oh gosh. When I was 25, it was a disaster area. I mean, I wasn't walking with the Lord at all. And I was every decision I made was coming from my pain and my hurt. So I made a lot of really, really tragic choices in my mid 20s. At 25, I would have told myself about Jesus. there's a better way and there's somebody, a real God who will help you.
Yeah.
It's not just a self-help theory. It's a real living God.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important. So, like, I think that in a world of like, we have plenty of information, right? Like most people, at least in the United States, have heard of Jesus. But it's...
Better or worse.
Yeah, exactly. For better or for worse. And like, what is it? Is it this one of the self-help ideas? Is this a guru or is it something else? You know, and I think
Well, unfortunately, like, what most non-Christians have heard about Christianity are the loud, kind of fanatical, unpleasant ones that aren't actually necessarily following Jesus that end up on the news and in the public forum. Because, of course, like the loud, weird, clickbaity things are the things that get shown and held up in the public sphere. And there's millions of wonderful people quietly living Christian lives that you're never going to hear about. So unless you've directly been in contact with somebody who you know is a Christian who has maybe given you something or that you've felt something when you're with, or that's the only example that, you know, they might see that is positive. Because we know the world doesn't like to hold up positive examples of Christianity. They usually hold up a lot of people calling themselves Christians who are actually not following Jesus or behaving in a Christian manner. I mean, I've seen that bumper sticker that I'm sure you have too. It's like, Jesus, save me from your followers. You know, and that's, I think, how a lot of people feel, especially in, you know, the industry I'm in is, you know, very much like that. They assume that we hate XYZ or, you know, it's just an assumption.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's sad. That's sad. Yeah. But like Jesus said, he'll know us from our love, you know, so I think that's the only thing you can really do.
Yeah, that's good. I think your point about the, even with projects, the case by case thing, I feel like that could be its own sermon. And that can go into so many aspects of life. I think that, to your point, is like people really want to just put up these like blinders and be like, all this, none of this.
They want a cruise control. They want cruise control. Yeah. They don't want to stay in contact with God in any kind of immediate, significant, daily way. They just want to just plug this in, turn on the cruise control, and go. And it's just spiritual laziness. And I'm not saying that I don't fall into that. Of course I do. But to have an awareness that that's not the optimal way, you can always come back to realizing, no, you need to be in constant conversation with God in some way.
Totally. I think there's a quote, I forget who said it, but it's like, religion is man's attempt to find a path so safe that they don't need the Holy Spirit anymore.
Or
that
they don't need
to hear from the Lord.
they don't need God. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's a set of instructions. Do this and you're good.
And I think the what's interesting is like, if you take the like a relationship analogy, you know, see it as more as a relationship. So like if you're like, oh, how do I, what are the rules of loving this person well? You know, what are they? And to kind of, you can kind of turn it into like, well, I bought flowers at this time and I, you know, said this word. I say this word every day at the same time to this person, you know. And it's like, you can kind of see how you almost start, like the relationship aspect starts kind of dying in some ways. You know, like it's important to have habits, I think. But how if you don't, if you don't go to the Lord.
Exactly. It's just not inhabited by anything alive. It just becomes form.
Yeah.
It becomes a structure with nothing filling it.
Is there anything, I know I want to be mindful of your time here. Getting some of our last questions. Is there, and it's fine if there's not an answer for this right off the bat, but is there anything you feel like maybe the Lord has been showing you or leading you towards in the past, you know, I don't know, year or week or anything?
I mean, just a lot of personal healing, I think, you know, personal stuff, not like anything pan, something more micro.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm 55 years old and there's still a tremendous amount of unprocessed wounding, I would say, from my young life. That's a process for me, but God has been showing me just over the past month or so, like how to truly put that in his hands and have him carry that for me. Not to convince myself it doesn't matter or convince myself, oh, that's no longer part of you. You're a new creature. Well, we know we're new in Christ, but also that still informs who I am today, those things. So having him carry them for me is well, God knows best. It's like that is the perfect way because you don't have to deny it happened. You don't have to tell yourself it doesn't matter. But it's not on you anymore. You're not carrying it. It doesn't, you're not leading from it or making your decisions through that filter. You can just take it and put it to the side and God can hold on to those things for you. And there is such freedom in that. And that's something that I've only ever really understood in a practical, active way and just recently. So that's, that's something wonderful that he's been showing me.
So cool. I know for Rebecca and I feel like there's a lot of crossover there and feeling like that the Lord doesn't just want to heal you now, but he wants to heal even the stuff from the past.
Like everything that makes up you, it's all connected.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I feel like that's been a part of our, like, bringing God into that. And I think for us, like, the verse, blessed are those who mourn because they will be comforted, was the verse we needed to hear when it came to this. Because I feel like a lot of our, like, operating system came from this place of, like, don't complain. Bad stuff happens to everybody. Move forward. Be grateful. That's
a
better life
anyway,
right?
That's what Lamentation's about. Like, we're allowed to lament.
Yeah, totally. This whole chapter's in the Bible. Psalms is about it, too. You know, it's like all over the Bible.
I mean, Jesus cried, even though he knew he was going to bring Lazarus back to life. He still cried about the fact that that had happened and that there was death in the world. It was still cause for mourning.
You
know, and he knew that it wasn't the end of the story.
Totally.
So how much more are we allowed, you know, when we know it in theory, but we don't know it as if we were God.
Totally. Yeah, that's good. The idea of like, I think we might say, don't cry. We know it ends well. But Jesus cries.
That's not real.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like oh, they're in a better place. It's like, I know that, but I miss them.
Yeah, exactly. The pain's real.
Yeah. I mean, that reminds me of my dad. He was such a jokester, but he was just stressing about the state of the world. And someone told him, well, you know, Jesus is still in his throne at the right hand of the Father. My dad was like, well, that's great for him, but we still have to live down here. And of course, he was joking, but it was like, yeah, but we still have to cope with what's going on.
Totally. That's funny. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for this time.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for asking me. It's fun to have a conversation with somebody about yourself. Essentially, everybody likes to talk about themselves and their own opinions. So it was sweet.
Well, thanks, it's very Ethan. Like, I feel like it is a gift for other people as well. So thank you for that. And I guess final question, any resources or habits or books or anything at all that you would like for people who feel called to create, anything you would recommend or read or do?
Yeah. I mean, depending on what you want to create, what your arena of creativity is, but I think it's really important to inform yourself about a tremendous amount of art and fields that don't necessarily automatically collide with yours, but if you're sort of stewing in all of this stuff, you suck it up by osmosis and it informs your own voice. I mean, I have a very extensive knowledge about the entirety of the 20th century as far as art, photography, fashion, architecture, painters. I mean, all of that stuff goes into what I do. Having those references in your head are really important. And I think that so often today, people's knowledge has just been distilled down to Instagram or TikTok. Yeah. That's what they know about. But if you ask them to list like the top four fashion photographers of like the first half of the 20th century or filmmakers, like they have no idea. They don't know who the great makeup artists are of the 20th century. They only know who's the great makeup artist on Instagram in the last year. So I just think really, really immersing yourself in a tremendous amount of knowledge is always better than just looking at Instagram or looking at, you know, whatever's online, because it's so limiting. And then it's like an echo chamber. Everybody's work ends up looking the same.
Yeah.
There's a makeup artist called Isamaya French, and she's incredibly creative, and I love a quote from her, and I'm not necessarily recommending this, but it is a point of view where she said, I don't look at anybody else's work because I don't want that voice in my head. I want my stuff to come from my own ideas. And, you know, I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
Photography, painters, architects, filmmakers, costume designers, other makeup artists. I mean, just anything that has to do with the arts, I think it's really good to have at least a functioning knowledge of those things.
And it seems like too, so much of, especially on like a big project, like a film or something, it's such a team sport, and communication is like, it's like, that's half the battle, is being able to communicate the idea or reference something.
And be patient and know it's never going to be exactly your vision when you let someone else do it.
Yeah.
That's like something that I have to be mindful of when I'm on set, is remembering that the person is more important, and which is a very counter our culture, you know. It's like people are so afraid to look like they've made a mistake or not be perfect that they would rather crush somebody else, you know, and their effort than possibly have someone go, that wasn't good enough, because they let something happen that wasn't necessarily perfectly their vision, but it was still good. So I think it's just, it's really important to remember that the people are more important, and to understand that your reputation, leave it in God's hands, just to leave it there. You don't have to run around making sure that everybody thinks you're the best thing in the world. Because really, that's max of insecurity. When you can't admit that you made a mistake, or you try to blame it on somebody else, or, I mean, it just makes you look insecure.
Yeah.
if I make a mistake, I cop to, oh, oops, you know, well, I'm not perfect.
I know, there's actually so much power in that too, being like, oh, I'm sorry, I made that mistake.
Oh, I kind of blew it there. I mean, you know, you don't want that, but it's just knowing that your worth and your value, despite the fact that you made a mistake, is more powerful than trying to pretend you didn't make one, because everyone knows you did. You're not hiding anything. And just like I was talking to my husband, you know, recently about how I really, patience is such a huge thing, because I'm a very quick worker. You know, I can do two or three different makeups and I look over and my team is still on their first person. And I think a lot of that just comes from confidence. They're so concerned about making me happy and making it how I want it to be that they're second guessing themselves. So I just have to be patient with that and be like, you know, affirm them. You guys are doing a great job. It looks great. And just let it be that, because there's definitely a fleshly part in me that wants to just go, just put them in my chair. I'll finish it.
you know?
But it's important not to do that to people unless, of course, there's someone standing at the door going, okay, we're ready for them. We need them on set. That's one thing. But if we still have time, let it just play out.
That's good.
You know?
I feel like if this was a sermon, which it's not, but if it was, I feel like a recurring theme would be servant leadership. Because I do think that the space you work in, and a lot of people, it's like, it really is like the makeup artists are, I mean, it's considered talent as well. You know, it's like some of them be very famous, you know what I mean? And I feel like you're no exception to that. But I think that to hear you talk about, I've experienced a lot in that zone, and hear you talking about that, coming from a place of service, you're here to serve, and knowing when to speak, when not, and but also leading, and to under a ticking clock to allow your team to continue to work because you want them to grow and you want to foster them well, and because you don't want to, even just the relationship, you want to, you know, be generous to them is, I feel like,
I want them to, I want to help them to grow so that they can be the boss one day if they want to be, you know? I mean, I'm a medium fish, and I'm okay with that, because it's like, I'm where God put me, and that's the only place I want to be.
Yeah.
So whatever that looks like in the world, I just have to be okay with that. And I am okay with that. I love my job. Awesome.
Yeah. Can I say a quick prayer for you, and then
I'd love that. Close out? Sure. Of course you can.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Lord, I thank you for Erin. I thank you for the way that you use her in her work to love well, to serve well, to listen, to bring comfort, Lord, to bring value, to bring confidence, to give peace. Lord, I pray that you would just in tenfold give that to her, Lord, that she could just bring that into her workspace and even with her team. Father, Lord, we thank you. I thank you for her heart in that. And just lead her and guide her, Lord. I pray that just bless her hands, Lord, in this process, Lord. Your hands are how we serve others, Lord. So I thank you for that. Bless her, her marriage, Father, and her all her relationships, Lord. I just pray that she would have ears to hear your voice everywhere she goes.
Yes,
in Jesus' name,
amen. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks, Nathan. That's
lovely. Of course. Thank you so much. This was great.